This week on The Inside Flap.
The best revenge queer people can have is to live well, to live happy, and to live successfully. And I've done that because I have taken that last name Clune. And now all anybody knows about the name Clune is it's related to queerness. Yeah. So anytime anybody looks up that name, they won't find the bigotry, the horrible, the vitriol, the evil. They will just see queer joy. So I've taken that name and I've made it gay as balls. And I am so proud of that.
She's like, well, let's move. Let's move 15 minutes closer.
Oh.
And so we're
15
like,
minutes?
15.
But you guys just got this
You're
house.
Gonna, yeah. Like 14 months ago, we built a new house. Anyways, but the thing is,
let's put that.
He's only there for two more years.
The plan sounds good.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live. Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the snack shack, to my right, is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the floral settee, that's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior. Thank you so much for tuning in. Wherever you are, to this episode 266 of
The Inside Flap
Book Podcast. Got a great show for today. We're joined by TJ Clune, New York Times and USA Today bestseller, Lambda Literary Award-winning author of The House in the Cerulean Sea. He is here to talk all about his new book, which is called...
Somewhere Beyond the Sea.
Somewhere Beyond the Sea. Oh, perfect. How about
yes,
that?
Yes, Andrew.
Dave, can you spell cerulean?
Well, I just looked at it, so it's going to... Okay. But I don't think... Had I not just looked at it, I don't think so.
Okay.
Second place, third grade, spelling bee, Miss Waters' class. I got out on the word stewardess, which is not... It makes me mad, because that's not even a word anymore. You can't say stewardess.
Well, you can. I'm sure it still is a word.
I'm sure some people...
You can spell flight attendant, can't you?
There's some former presidents who probably still say stewardess. But I got out on that word.
Honestly, I bet there's a lot of older Americans that say stewardess.
That's true. I got a...
male and female.
But I did... I won the boys... I don't know why she...
Boys.
She had a boys champion and a girls champion.
Oh.
Miss Waters, Kent Island Elementary School.
Huh.
And I want a Hardy Boys book.
Well, girls at that age are more advanced than boys, so perhaps.
Yeah, let's say, so really, I was the actual champion is what you're saying.
No, I'm saying.
And let me guess, the girl won a Nancy Drew book.
You know, I have no idea what she won. That's a great guy.
I bet she did.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
Those are the days.
Huh.
All right, well, anyway, we'll have that interview for you in just a second, but I got a few things to share from the week. That was, we just wrapped up our auditions for Sweeney Todd. Andrew, you going to come watch the Sweeney Todd musical there at East?
So when is the production?
It'll be at the end of October.
Yeah, there's a good chance.
All right. It should be a good show.
Won't be Halloween. But it'll be a good chance.
Have a show on Halloween. Yeah. I think the show starts October 24th.
I don't know why you guys do shows on Halloween.
I have no idea why
I don't
why
think
either.
You should. I've been there and you guys do the shows and they are lightly attended.
Yeah. That's the one show that's going to be at 4 in the afternoon.
Oh, that makes sense.
And Dev was actually telling the parents that would be a good show to go to because the kids aren't going to come.
Kids are not going
to
come.
No, why would they? No. And they don't even want to perform.
I've already heard from Sylvia.
Yeah.
That she is already worried because she's supposed to get two costumes because Halloween on college campuses is a very big deal.
Mm. Why would she?
Because you celebrate multiple nights because I believe Halloween is on a Thursday this year.
By the way, she's doing an awful lot of celebrating.
A lot
for
of
someone
celebrating.
Who's a first
so
year
I think
freshman.
That Halloween is on a Thursday a night, which means it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night extravaganza.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. A lot of celebrating.
Don't know when the midterms are, but she does know when Halloween is.
Remember when she said she was going to start listening to the show now that she's away in college?
She's not going to.
She's not going to listen to the show. But anyway, so we were doing auditions for Sweeney Todd, which for this guy, the guy with the two thumbs over here,
Dave Medicus,
meant sitting in the black box for, so we had over two nights from 4 and went till 6:30. On the last Wednesday and Thursday, whatever it was, 2.5 hours. Now, here's the deal. I go to the auditions because I'm one of the two theater teachers along with Deb Voss, and Knowledge was there also. He's the musical director. Look, I'm the tech guy. Okay, I teach theater, but Deb could care less about my thoughts as to who should play what part. But I'm there because I should be there, I guess. I'm the theater
teacher.
She
expects you to offer your two cents, though.
And she does.
Because she is fair that way.
She's known.
She may not listen to you.
I think she, you know, well, I've stopped taking notes. I sit there and I watch and I'm there. I'm a warm presence in the room.
Similar situation. So Sylvia and I will judge student-directed plays every year. My first year, I took copious notes.
Yeah.
And then I realized Deb is going to
she's going to choose what Deb wants to choose.
Whomever she wants to anoint, which is fair. She's seen these kids work and work and work. I get it. She listens, but at the same time, I do not need to be taking copious notes.
No.
And I was sitting next to a woman who didn't know that. And she wrote books.
But she did. But Deb, I remember that year. It was Cake that won, and she I don't think that was going to win, and she took your guys'
I don't remember Cake.
Opinion. Yeah. Hmm. But there you go. Maybe it shouldn't have won. I don't know.
Was that the horror one?
It had a surprise. No, it was that's the head in the box one.
Oh.
That was a good one.
Was a good one.
It had a twist ending with the they shot each other at the end, or I don't remember.
I don't think I had anything to do with that.
That's, I don't know.
That sounds like
maybe didn't.
So it sounds like my relatives who ask my opinion on their personal matters, but then they're going to do what they were going to do in the first place.
They're going to do they're going to do.
I will say that's true. I am guilty of that.
Mm-hmm.
I will kind of know in my heart what I want to do, but I'll still ask someone's opinion thinking, well, maybe I'll change my mind.
Right.
I don't know. But I don't know why we do that as human beings.
I don't know either. Well, I do know, in any case, I had to be there. So I was, we're doing Sweeney Todd. Now, for the auditions, not for the callbacks, for the auditions, we had, I don't know, probably 100 kids. You know, every 3 minutes, they would rotate in. They would bring a new one in. And we had your buddy, Kingham, Matt Kingham.
Oh, I love Kingham.
Yeah, he was on the piano. He was the accompanist. Hmm. So they have to come in. Converse with Matt so they knew so he knew
I like
which
how he's
song.
My buddy. I haven't seen him in like 2 years.
I don't know why he's your buddy. Well, he's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
But you're right. Well, you have not seen him in a year and a half.
Yeah.
But not since our trip to England. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've seen him at different shows, maybe.
I probably have.
The point is this. He's there and he's on the piano, and then we have like 5 or 6 tables set up in the front, and there's Deb, and there's Knowledge, there's all the student directors, Stella's a student director, some other student directors, there's Tess, and Tess is the timekeeper. She's a technical theater student, but she's in charge of the stopwatch, so if someone goes over, she's supposed to yell at them, nobody went over. Hmm. And then there's me, and I'm at the very end. And very, very quickly, I got very, very bored. So this is what I did. I was a little bit of a bad influence on Tess. We noticed that kids, when they came in, the boys, they were wearing these button-up shirts.
Okay.
And so they would start fiddling with the buttons during their audition. And they had to sing. So there were different songs they had to sing. Deb had a bunch of Stephen Sondheim songs for them to sing to. And everyone... Mm-hmm. I mean, literally 50% of the kids sang this song.
Everybody says don't. Everybody says don't. Everybody says don't. It isn't right.
Everybody says don't. We got so sick and tired of hearing.
Everybody says don't. Everybody
is it because
don't.
You can sing speak?
Yes. Yes.
So you don't have to sing.
Exactly why it is.
Because I feel like I might choose this too.
A lot of people were sing
can,
speaking
I can
this
sing
one.
Speak,
yes. Yes.
But I can't sing.
Exactly.
Well, no, she's singing.
I say, say.
I still I could.
So there is some singing, but there is also but it's everybody says, and then someone else will come and everybody says don't. We would just roll our eyes.
Okay.
But
that's really funny.
So here's what Tess and I did. I said, Tess, all right, here's what we're gonna do to make this a little more entertaining for us. We're gonna have a little friendly wager. So when someone comes in and we're going to take turns, you either say, yes, they're going to play with their buttons, or no, they're not. So we did that for a little bit, but
that's
then we realized.
That's awesome. Yeah, oh, they all great. Were? But you realize they all were?
Well, no. We realized that it's boring when it's a girl comes in and they don't have buttons.
Okay.
So then it got to, okay, well, what is going to be their thing? Either they're going to have a thing or they're not. And what's that thing going to be? Mm-hmm. And so we'd watch them walk in and go talk to Kingham and set up the the song that they're going to do. We'd say, okay, she's playing with her necklace. So, and it was my turn. I'd say, okay, she's going to play with her necklace during the audition. And then if she did, I would get a point. Or Tess would say, oh, she's tugging at her shorts. She's going to tug at her shorts during the audition. And so we kept score. And
I'm a shorts tugger.
Yeah, there were a lot of shorts.
Because sometimes you realize when you're standing there, like mm-hmm. that they're maybe short, too short.
Oh, right.
And they've risen up.
Yeah.
And you start to feel self-conscious. Right. Mm-hmm. So then you try to tug them down.
Well, Tess won the first night and I won the second night.
Oh,
so really,
well, congratulations.
Nobody won. Nobody. We bet $1. Mm-hmm. And then.
Voss catch wind of you two?
Oh, she heard a lot of giggling and a lot of laughing going on, but she was kind of...
She was fine.
Like, she takes notes and...
Didn't bother her.
No, I don't think so. And somebody's got to be the... somebody's got to provide a little a little laughter in the room.
Because
it's a very serious room. So somebody's got to be that person. So that's what I do. Yeah, so Sylvia is auditioning, and that's very exciting. It's interesting to see that she showed no interest in doing any theater all throughout high school.
I'm honestly puzzled by Sylvia.
And now all of a sudden she wants to do
the thing about Sylvia,
in college.
Andrew.
A lot of celebrating.
She's not like a risk taker in terms of a skydiver. Or mountain climbing or anything like that. She's maybe what I would call as a personal risk taker.
Mm.
So she will put herself out there in ways that continually surprises me.
Yeah. I think she just wants to meet more people. She seems really intent on meeting a lot of people.
She has met a lot of people.
I know, but I don't know.
She had 10 kids in her dorm room last night, and she said we had so much fun.
I don't know.
And maybe a couple of the kids she's hanging around with are going that direction, and she feels like it. Now, what are the chances she's going to end up with some East High School students?
Well, she has. She's seen, shout out to B. She keeps seeing B.
She
Finch,
thinks she's seeing B.
Who was Antigone last year, and Antigone, a fabulous actress.
And
but,
B has a unique look, so it's possible she is seeing
So
B.
I think she's seeing her, but...
I mean that in a very good way.
Sylvia said she stares at her, and then... B glares at her because B doesn't know who she is.
Oh, she probably wonders, why is this girl staring
at
me?
She hasn't gone up to her and spoken to her yet. So I bet there is. But, you know, she is taking a theater class. So
She loves her theater professor.
Yeah. Hmm. And shout out to Dr. C. But I remember, so I was thinking today, and I do remember, I did, the last time I auditioned was at James Madison, shout out JMU, when I was, they had some student-directed productions down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing a comedic monologue. I got the part. And then later on, I was talking to the director, Ken Gibson. And he said, yeah, I just wrote down Dark Killer.
So oh.
I don't know. Oh, and my God. What do you I did a comedy.
Oh,
there
that's
you
interesting.
Go. Uh-huh.
Have you ever auditioned for anything, Andrew?
Maybe back in high school, but that's...
Yeah?
That's
oh, yeah,
it.
For the Music Man. I don't... Did we audition for that? I don't remember.
I think we did. I mean, I think we had to
I would assume
do
we
something.
Did.
Yeah.
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 Oh, my gosh. My best friend in... middle school at the time, Renata, shout out to Renata.
Yes.
She made me audition for it was like Our Town or something, one of those that all schools do. And I can't sing, correct? Well, I guess she
Our Town is not a musical.
It was a musical. Whatever it was a musical.
All right.
And I can't sing, but I auditioned anyway. I'm remembering this now. It was mortifying. It was awful.
You repressed
and
it.
And she auditioned too. We didn't hear anybody. It was closed.
Mm.
And we both were probably the only two kids who did not get a part and were given the task of handing out the programs.
Oh, no. The
program night of.
Handouters?
Yeah. I didn't even get a scene background person.
So here's my story. So the Music Man was probably my big
high school production.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I had like a couple roles there. I was probably one of the more active male roles.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a twin brother, Anthony, who looks nothing like me.
No, not at all.
Never has.
Yeah. Nope.
Never has.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm pretty quiet in high school, right? It's not like I made a lot of waves or anything like that. So basically, after we did the performance, and I don't know how many performances we did, if it was just one or...
It was probably three.
Yeah.
I had to guess I'd say three.
But basically, everybody was complimenting the hell out of my twin brother.
You are kidding.
What?
No.
Oh, no.
Anthony's probably saying thank you.
And nobody said a word.
Anthony.
Nobody said a word.
Was he even in it?
I don't think he was in it.
No, I don't remember him being in it.
Because he was playing football or he was doing other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Did he have hair back then?
He did, but it was blonde.
Oh, it was blonde.
We looked nothing like we said.
Because I was thinking if he had the dark hair, perhaps.
Uh-oh. No, he did not have dark hair. No.
We looked nothing alike.
They
we never have.
They looked nothing alike at all.
I'm so confused then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Well, did he accept the thanks? I probably would have.
He told me, he's like, oh man, I had so many people tell me how great I was.
I know. I probably would have just said thank you.
Yeah, that was a low way. I had to sing. I cannot sing at all.
No.
I was the professor.
We also learned you
can't
dance. What were you doing?
I have no idea. Faking it.
Mm.
Wow.
Faking it.
How come you couldn't fake it to get on the Denver Stiffs?
If only I could have gotten on the average Joes. The
average Joes, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
But he invented a new dance move called the worm walk.
You know, I call it the army crawl.
Yeah.
But yeah, worm walk works, yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, that's really funny.
Anyway, Laura, how has your week been?
Oh, it's been pretty good. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I have been taking Teddy out for walks multiple times a day.
Yes, getting lots of walks.
And I do the
puppy
morning walks. So now I'm starting to see, you know, when you walk, I take him up to our park that's nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to see the same people all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just kind of interesting because there's, you know, it's fun to look at people and what their dogs look like. Mm-hmm. There's grounds people up there starting to pick up, I don't know, clean. I have no idea what they're doing. They're always on a tractor. Grass must need to be cut quite
frequently.
Well, they
do got to keep that trim. Yeah, we can't have kids spraining an ankle up there.
That's probably true. Not like the NFL people that went to Brazil and...
Hurt
themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's been kind of fun just meeting neighbors and talking to people who I just wouldn't normally see. It's that having a dog opens that up for you.
Yeah.
Because I have a certain time without a dog. I always like to walk in the evenings. I'm not a morning exercise person,
right.
But because of the dog, I'm forced to
And Teddy demands that instant action.
I am forced to be a before 8 a.m.
Right.
morning walker now, which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy it.
Now,
I enjoy my time out with Teddy, but I don't enjoy morning walking in particular.
I know you've seen our neighbor Bill up there in the park.
I've seen Bill running. Yeah. I've seen all kinds of people with their dogs and, you know, it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So I've seen multiple people passed out.
Okay.
Up at the park. I've also seen
in the morning or in the evening?
No, it was always in the evening. Okay, it's always in the evening with the people passed
good
out.
You know.
Yeah.
That heat.
So I'll see. I don't think that's what it is.
Oh, really?
So I'll see kids playing soccer with families, Andrew, and there's a guy just completely passed out underneath the tree.
Hmm.
Yet there's families kicking around soccer.
Well, maybe
balls.
He got bored watching the game. I was up there with Teddy today, I saw a lot of parents on their phones having to sit through another practice.
The thing that I don't know with parents is why wouldn't they just walk around and get some exercise?
And I was wondering that exact same thing.
Because there's a lot of people that'll just sit in their car.
They're just sitting. They're sitting in their. It's a beautiful park. It's a beautiful day.
Or sit outside if you're going to
sit in their car.
Yeah.
While their kids are practice.
So my MO would typically be to walk or exercise.
Yeah,
or do
mine
something
too.
But there's been
or
times.
Or sit and read a book.
There's been times like I had to go to like the Littleton, the public library around the corner, and I was so tired, I hadn't slept or anything.
Did you sleep in the car? Maybe Andrew was one of the guys that I
was wondering
see
now.
Well, so I went in the library, and basically kicked my feet up.
Oh no!
And fell asleep in the library.
In the library. Yeah,
fell asleep.
But people sleep
so
in
then,
the library now.
They do. Yeah. Homeless
then Dashiell still wasn't ready, so I went outside. I laid down on the picnic table and fell asleep there.
You are kidding me.
But sometimes,
so I am seeing men. It's always men.
Yeah, but sometimes it's just
sleeping.
Like if I'm driving the kids or whatever.
Yeah.
I get there and I'm just exhausted.
I haven't seen people sleeping. They're usually looking at their phones.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, maybe what I see is a lot of people looking on their phones.
Mm-hmm. It's possible it's work emails and stuff like that. I don't know, you know. But there's very, very rarely are people walking.
Yeah, around. No, you're right. You're right. Well, maybe they're just moving so fast you can't see them.
That could be.
They're moving. I'm sure that's it.
You know?
There are people walking in the park. They could be parents.
There are, but there's not very many.
You're right.
And also, I kind of get to know.
So you know, there are a lot of people out there playing pickleball.
Oh, a ton. Hmm.
Those pickleball courts are packed.
I have. I mean, I can. You know, I don't mind it. I just.
You know, Andrew and I picked up tennis. We were playing tennis.
I remember that.
We should get back. We should maybe
pick up some pickleball.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we should try it. Sure. I've got pickleball paddles and everything.
Yeah. Oh. So do we. I'd love to get back.
I don't
back.
Know where ours are.
Play some pickleball.
Yeah. Huh. Let's do it.
All right. Done. Okay. All right, Andrew, how have you been?
Well, you know, I don't know what Robert would say.
Robert Justice, you mean?
Robert Justice.
I wonder, what would he say this?
Andrew, you're growing on us.
Well, yeah,
no.
Of course he would. Of course he would.
He'd probably say this.
Is he really that busy?
So let's see. I go to bed earlier now because I'm basically getting up at like
5. You should.
I'm like getting up at 5 in the morning.
What is early to you?
9 o'clock.
Okay, yeah, that's perfect. Okay. That's perfect. Okay.
Because I'm getting up at 5.
You have to.
You know, going to work and stuff like that. Now, a lot of times, like, I'll get home from work, or sometimes I don't have time to get home from work, and I got to drive to Littleton to pick Dashiell up and stuff. So, I mean, tonight we'll get home around 9, mm-hmm. and I probably have about an hour's worth of work to do before I can, like, go to bed.
Wow.
You know, and then I'll be getting up at 5 tomorrow to do it all over again.
Why are you getting up at 5? What time do you have to be at school?
So I don't have to actually be, like, at school until 7:30.
That's still early.
Like, you know, maybe a little, and it's about a half an hour drive, but, you know, I've got, like, work to do. I've got class work to do. I've got to get ready for classes, and, you know, so it is what it is. And I've got to figure it out. I've got to adjust it more and stuff like that, but, like, you know, I have a project due on Wednesday that, you know, and I'm a morning person, so I want to get in there early, but my mentor loves to grab me in the morning, "Hey, Andrew, let's talk."
Oh.
Oh no.
You know, and so basically, like,
what does she want to talk about?
My golden time, I'm not even going to.
Okay.
Go,
yeah. Okay.
So my golden time in the morning is, leave me alone. Give me my half an hour of peace and quiet.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
To get stuff straightened out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
I want to get my head together. I want to get my. I think most people like to get their head together.
Yeah. What time does your mentor teacher get there?
Early. Like, we're probably the two earliest teachers to get to the school.
Mm.
So you know, so I'm thinking tomorrow.
4:30.
Can I?
Andrew was over here the other day telling me he was going to get to school at 5. I'm like,
because
the building might not even be open.
He wants to be. Oh, my dad used to get, because he was a teacher in inner city Baltimore.
That's true. First to arrive and first to leave.
He was the first to arrive. He would arrive before the maintenance guy, the janitor, to open up the building.
Yeah, Andrew thinks he can access the building 24/7. I'm trying to explain to him that teachers can't just get in whenever you want.
I've been told it's 24/7.
I don't know.
And it might be different out there because it's rural and it's not like...
Maybe it is.
Like,
I feel like you can. I bet Mr. Emmons has a key to that back door.
We can't. No. We, as a teacher, I can't get in whenever... Once... Because they set the alarm. Every school I've ever taught in,
but
there's an alarm system.
What about Saturdays?
I don't think there's any alarm.
But there's a maintenance person in there.
Oh, that's why.
Justin. Yeah. Get this. His name is Justin.
Uh-huh.
You want his last name?
Trudeau.
No. Case.
Just, that's cute.
Just in case.
His parents had a sense of humor.
That's cute.
You can't, they have to open up the building, turn on the lights, run the boiler, whatever the heck they do. But yeah, you can't just waltz into a school whenever you want.
So I'm still figuring that out.
They set the alarm. You know, you will set the alarm
Andrew's
off.
Andrew's going to set the alarm off. We'll find out.
I don't think there is an alarm at our school.
Wow.
There is an alarm at your school. Yeah, there is.
But in any event.
There's got to be.
Yeah.
So there's that, sorting that out. So
country kids know how to party, too.
That's right.
So basically, our kids go to two different school districts. I'm working in a third school district. So we're spread across three different counties.
Spread thin.
So in any event, Katie's like, 2 weeks ago, she's like, "I'm just tired of this driving," because she's going to drive and drive and drive.
Mm-hmm. Two weeks ago. So week one, she's tired of the driving.
I've been in school, 4 weeks now? And the kids have been in school, 3 weeks?
Is it 2 hours for Dashiell? Because it's a half hour there, half hour for her to come back, half hour back.
It depends on traffic.
Because that's 2 full hours.
It depends on traffic. Right, and sometimes, like, she's got to be in two places at the same time.
Which that's a problem.
So yeah,
she's like, well, let's move. Let's move 15 minutes closer.
Oh.
And so we're
15 minutes.
15.
But you guys just got this house.
Yeah, like 14 months ago, we bought a new house. Anyways, but the thing is,
there for two more years.
The plan sounds good, right?
No, it doesn't. But
so anyways,
Dashiell's got two more years.
Yeah,
he'll be driving.
Yeah, two and three quarter years. I mean, he's just barely started school. But
when would you guys move?
So anyway, so let me get through.
Sorry.
Let me tell the story.
There's a lot of holes in this plot.
So basically, it looks like we can sell the house that we're in and make a decent profit.
Okay.
Right? That bears fruit.
Okay.
But the question is, and we can buy a house that's like walking distance from where Mary Kate and Peter will go to school, right?
The high school there?
The high school there, Rock Canyon and Rocky Heights Middle.
Okay.
And then it would only be 15, 20 minutes for Dashiell to drive on back roads to high school.
Okay.
Right?
That seems reasonable.
So everything sounds good. Then we went to an open house on Saturday, right? So this house has it's got the four bedrooms upstairs, only one bathroom between the bedrooms that the three kids would have
to share. It goes back to what you had before.
And that's it. And then downstairs, the kitchen and the main floor needs a complete renovation, right? You need to knock walls down and stuff like that. And Katie's like, that's going to cost $150 to do the renovation. I'm like, no,
more
honey.
Than that.
It's I'm like
a lot more than
you
that.
With your expensive taste.
Even
it's
one
going to cost a lot more. Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, that's not going to happen. And then there's also no storage. So anyways, we come to the realization, or she comes to the realization. I come home from work today, and she's like, we got to stay here. She's like, unfortunately,
we
just can't get a house that's big enough for us and the family.
Well, you guys each, like, the kids have their walk-in closet. They each have their own bathroom,
bathrooms,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have
a
very nice setup now.
And we looked, and that's the problem is we just can't get the square footage. Like, in the area we want to move, the square footage just doesn't exist.
No.
So basically that plan went from the hot plan, we're gearing up for all this, to basically...
Back to where you are.
Basically back to where we are. Yeah. So
well, and Dashiell can drive the back roads from. He can listen to an audiobook. He'll be just fine.
He's very reluctant to learn to drive.
I've heard boys are.
So
yeah,
you know, and it's
that's
not,
very common.
Yeah,
for
now
that,
especially
that age
nowadays,
group of boy
kids don't.
Sylvia
want to learn how to
couldn't
drive.
Wait to leave us.
Yeah. And I can't blame him. And the thing is, if we were still living in Littleton, and he's looking at a 1 mile drive to school.
Oh yeah,
it'd be a different situation. But that's not. That's not what we're looking at.
Mm-mm.
So, and I guess my insurance premiums are looking forward to staying low for another year. So there's no problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just something you're going to have to deal with. What about Uber? Have you looked into Uber?
I've looked into Uber, but I just don't feel like putting... Like,
I wouldn't.
My kid with some strange Uber freaking driver.
I mean, no, don't do it.
I've had horror stories with Uber.
I have too. I would never
and
do
for
that.
A young kid, I mean, how are they going to deal with... You know,
no.
God knows what the scenario might be.
You don't know if that. I would never do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's you know, it's.
Yeah.
It sounds it sounds nice, but, you know, you just can't do it.
Yep. Well, I can. I'll tell you what you can do. And that's pick up the new T.J. Klune book. It's the next in line in the House in the Cerulean Sea Chronicles. And it is called
Somewhere Beyond the Sea.
Somewhere Beyond the Sea.
Like the Bobby Darin song.
Laura. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Laura, you read this book. Tell us a little bit about this book.
Yeah. So this is part two in T.J.'s Cerulean Chronicles. Mm. I really loved the first book, reviewed on the show back when. It has the same, you know, lovable cast of magical children who are living on a magical island, which is awesome, cared for by two men, Arthur and Linus. In this book, Arthur and Linus welcome another magical child to the fold, this time a Yeti named David, who is awesome. He cries ice cubes.
Oh,
and he puts on like, what are those detectives? Like a Dirty Harry style detective.
Fedora.
Dramas.
Oh,
puts on little productions.
I think you're going with hat.
Well, he does wear the fedora sometimes too to get the whole, you know, hard-boiled detective.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of look. So, If you haven't read any of TJ's book, he is a very funny author.
Yes.
However, this book, Arthur and Linus are also forced to defend their raising of the children, to defend who they are as individuals, and also, you know, who these children are that they take care of, some of whom, really all of whom, the government looks upon with suspicion, mistrust, and fear. It's a world where not everyone has magic, by the way. So this book has some really funny moments with all the kids together. It's awesome to read. It also has some sad moments in terms of reflection on our current society, the government's treatment of the LGBTQ plus community, and in particular, trans people. So you'll hear TJ go into that a little bit.
All right, excellent. So here now, talking about his book,
Somewhere Beyond the Sea.
Somewhere Beyond the Sea. This is TJ Blue.
Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
I didn't mean to startle you.
Yeah. I was doing some work, and I'm so sorry, TJ. And then
it's okay. I'm just that's the second person. That's the second person I've scared today. I was walking my dog this morning and taking him for a walk, and I rounded a corner, and there was a woman there with her tiny little dog, and she like screamed. I was like, no, I'm just a person. I'm just a person. It's okay.
It's your day. It's your
I
day.
I know it is my day. But this is awesome. This is like the last. The last pre-event that I do before the book comes out. So thank you for being my last little thing.
I'm so excited to be the last one. I'm so excited to talk to you. I tell you, your fans on Goodreads are out of their minds. They're out of their minds. I don't know if you look at it,
but
the dramatic posting that has happened with not a review yet because they haven't read it yet, but the dramatic posting of like, this day has finally come. I can't believe...
Oh yeah, I did. I was doing an event last night with readers in the UK, or yesterday while I was night over there, and there was like hundreds of people there, and they were just all like freaking out. I'm like, I know, it's exciting. Still got 5 days, but we're almost there. You've waited 4 years, so 5 days isn't going to be too much longer.
I know. Man, I loved your latest book, Somewhere Beyond the Sea, which is that song keeps coming in and out of my head, as you, of course, would know.
And it's going to be an earworm that's going to stick with people for the rest of their lives. And I have no regrets.
It's a great song. This is a tale of yachting adventures, nocturnal ink emissions, and mustaches. Mm-hmm. What inspired you to write this one?
So the House in the Cerulean Sea, Somewhere Beyond the Sea. House in the Cerulean Sea was supposed to be one book. It was not supposed to have a sequel. I wrote House in the Cerulean Sea, Under the Whispering Door, and In the Lives of Puppets back to back to back, all before Cerulean Sea came out in 2020. So those books were done. And I had written The House in the Cerulean Sea in 2017, 2018. So it had been some good time had passed since then. And again, I was not planning on going back because I wanted those three books to be standalones. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to, because I've written so many sequels in my career.
Yeah.
And I wanted these to stand alone, to do something different. And it would have stayed that way had it not been for two things in particular. Okay. One, the character of Chauncey never leaves my head. He's always in my head.
He's my favorite.
In the book. And I always hear his voice. I don't even hear the voice that I created initially. I hear Daniel Hennings, the audio narrator's voice for Chauncey.
I've got to listen to it.
His when the audition happened for Cerulean Sea, the reason he got the job was because of his Chauncey voice.
Wow.
Everything it clicked immediately. So I have Chauncey in my head at all times. But the biggest reason that I wrote this sequel and the reason that it exists is because of the rising anti-LGBTQ and specifically anti-trans movement that is occurring across the United States.
Yeah.
If you'll recall, and if your listeners will remember, a few years ago, in 2021 and 2022, trans people and parents of guardians of trans youth were invited to testify in front of the government. Unfortunately, it turned out to be a bit of an ambush with the politicians there questioning the people they invited about their bodies, about their minds, about their right to exist. They accused parents and guardians of trans youth of transing them as if that's how it works. It's not.
No. And like that's what a parent would do. Also, it doesn't, right. None of it makes any sense.
So yeah. When I saw that happening, it reminded me of in The House in the Cerulean Sea, at the very end of that book, two things of note happened. One, Arthur and Linus were told of another child that could potentially be wanting to come to their home. And two, that the rising anti-trans movement in this country put me on a path to want to tell a story. And I could have done that in a new world. I could have built a new story around it. But in this case, I wanted to go back to this world because The House in the Cerulean Sea was built upon otherness. It was built upon people being othered for being different. Mm-hmm. And in the end of The House in the Cerulean Sea, in addition to David, it was hinted at that Arthur was invited to come and testify in front of the government. And I thought, what if that turned out to be real life, like real life? What happens if that turned out to be an ambush? Mm-hmm. And so what did I do? I went back and spoke with the people I had spoken before, social workers, teachers, therapists, who work with kids on a regular basis. I spoke to people who have been adopted and fostered. I spoke to people who adopt and foster and put people in their homes. In addition to that, though, I spoke to some of the people involved in testifying in front of the United States government.
Wow.
And I asked them some questions, obviously, but the one question that I asked universally throughout was, if you knew what was coming, if you knew the reception you were going to receive, would you do it all over again anyway? And every single one of them said yes. Mm. And the reason being is because regardless of what happened, regardless of the response they received, they were still able to get up there and speak their truth. Yeah. They were still able to get up there and be their authentic selves. And to be quite honest, I don't know if I would have the power to do something like that.
Well,
these people are extraordinary. They are powerful. And they are some of the bravest people that I've ever had the pleasure of talking to. And so I wanted to put that idea of this fact that the government is responsible for so much of the divisive language that we use. Mm-hmm. What happens when the government starts fighting back? Mm. What happens when the government says, you've done enough and we're taking over from here? What does that look like to this family? But on top of that, what does it look like to a group of kids who have been told their entire life that they're monsters, but have been given a home to learn to use their voice? What does that look like when those kids finally start to do that? How do Arthur and Linus's parents let their kids do that? How do they take a step back and say, we've taught you what we know, now it's your turn to go out and do something with the world, whether that be making mistakes, whether that be doing something not as great, whether that be doing something amazing. And I think many, many, many parents know that position, know that feeling of, I've done my best, but is it good enough? And can I really let my kids go?
Yeah.
Can I let my kids grow up like I've taught them to?
Absolutely. My daughter just started college for the first time. And that feeling is there of like, did I do it? What did I do? Yeah. But you also, they have to make mistakes, you know,
they have to, because that's mistakes. Right. Exactly. That's how you grow up. That's how you,
why do we have to learn from mistakes?
I know it's terrible at the same time, it's kind of uniquely wonderful. It's uniquely human. That we have to learn by trial and error. It's like when you're a child, you learn not to touch something hot because it burns. It's the same kind of thing, just different, you know, emotions, different feelings, different thoughts.
One thing I love about fantasy is that it's a great storytelling area to parallel, and horror does this too, to kind of parallel things that are happening in real life. And your book is so entertaining. It's incredibly funny. Also, I've got to listen to the audio of it.
Oh, that's a different experience altogether. Because Daniel Henning is very, he has a background in theater. He's very theatrical, which you would That's need awesome. To be to play these characters.
Yeah, you really do. And I just love how you've taken that genre of fantasy and you've turned it into something just really important, really meaningful. I can't imagine the letters, the fan mail that you probably get.
Mm-hmm.
Are you inundated with it? Is it tough?
Oh, yeah. It's
okay.
It can be tough to read at times. Yeah. Because, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard from teachers, social workers, librarians, yeah. people who work with children mm-hmm. who tell me, I have a Lucy, I have a Fee, I have a Sal, I have a Talia, I have a Chauncey, I have a Theodore, or some have all of them. Some have combinations of the others. And what has been really extraordinary to me is that how many people have found this family and made it their own. And I have heard from people all over the world. I've heard from people in their 80s and 90s who haven't picked up a book in decades. And wow. Specifically, though, there's one group of people that I would love to highlight. And it may seem kind of strange, but I have a point for this. Mm-hmm. So as we all know, women or female identifying people are read more than men do. That's because women are more curious. they like to learn more. And let's be frank, most of them are more intelligent than men are.
Though they say.
So, but what I've noticed is just how many men are now picking up these books. And a lot of them right. are queer men mm-hmm. who never got to have queer Damn. Joy in books. I mean, I get emails, letters, messages from queer men in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who these books bring them the joy that they never thought they could have. Because think about it. When I was a kid, I grew up in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Queer people, if they were in books, were either the over-the-top offensive stereotypes, or they were there to teach straight characters a very valuable lesson by getting sick or by getting hurt or by getting killed.
I don't remember queer characters.
Yeah,
I'm a little older than you, and I don't remember reading about them.
Yeah, but here's the thing. A lot of the 80s and 90s, rightly so, was AIDS fiction. Because that's what queer men, queer people were going through at the time.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is about, you know, again, and rightly so, the pain
Michael
and suffering.
And stuff
right,
like,
exactly, yeah. okay. exactly. And all about that. So when you think about that necessary and vitally important part of genre fiction, but it's also queer men suffering.
Yeah.
That's all it is suffering. Yeah. So when I get to write these stories about queer men, like in this book, in this series, for example, Linus Baker is a fat, fussy man in his 40s.
Yeah.
And he gets to be the hero of the book. And now we have Arthur.
I identify most with Linus.
Right. Yeah. And now we have Arthur who's in his late 40s getting to be the hero of the book. Something that I want to continue to do is that there's this idea that heroes of books, especially in fantasy and science fiction and quote unquote romanticy, need to be young people, because young people are the ones that can do everything. Young people, you find love when you're young. A lot of people don't seem to think that your life doesn't stop once you hit 30. Your life doesn't stop once you hit 40. And people of any age can find love and family and adventure as long as they go looking for it. And that's what I love about this, is that I get to have so many queer people who never got to experience joy when reading a book. They get to have these books now and point to something to say, this is from my community. This makes me happy. And that is the most humbling thing that a person could ask for. That's extraordinary.
Awesome. And it's normalized. It's every day. Sorry, I have a puppy and he's...
That's okay. My dog is somewhere around here.
Excited. Teddy. I got a famous author on the Don't you know? It's normalized. It's not made a big deal. The book is not necessarily about that, which is great too.
Wait, but to me, homophobia is boring. Homophobia, homophobic characters are boring. And look, I can write about bigotry and fighting for what's right, but it doesn't have to be at the expense of calling my queer character slurs. It doesn't have to be at the expense of bringing them down for their sexuality. You know, the queerness of this book is prevalent as it is in all my books, but it's not just about that.
No,
it's not,
not at
just
all.
about a romance with Arthur.
Yeah.
It's not just about, you know, all the, it's about all different forms of family and love, platonic, familial, friendship, romantic, all of that.
Absolutely. And speaking of familial, I'm an only child, and your books, these two, they really speak to me in a way that, like, I have a fantasy. I've always had a fantasy of what a big, messy family would be. And they really speak to me about that. They're like such a great, like, self-soothing kind of story for me. Do you have, I was curious, are you an only child? Are you from a big family?
I am from a family, unfortunately, that did not care about me in any way, shape, or form. I have my brother. I have my brother and my sister, and they're my family. Unfortunately, my mother and stepfather are extraordinarily bigoted. They're homophobic. They are misogynistic. My stepfather's family is extraordinarily racist. And so what the thing is with that, and this is something that I cling to a lot, is that when I was 5 or 6 years old, my stepfather adopted me and my sister, giving us the last name Clune. And that name was filled with anger and vitriol and abuse. And a lot of people don't seem to realize that abuse isn't just always physical. It can be psychological. It can be emotional.
It can be neglect.
And exactly.
Yeah.
And so I was abused growing up because I was an effeminate queer kid growing up in rural Oregon in the 80s and 90s. So of course I would have a target on my back. But here's the thing. I've told so many people over my career that the best revenge queer people can have is to live well, to live happy, and to live successfully. And I've done that because I have taken that last name Clune, and now all anybody knows about the name Clune is it's related to queerness.
Yeah.
So anytime anybody looks up that name, they won't find the bigotry, the horrible, the vitriol, the evil. They will just see queer joy. So I've taken that name and I've made it gay as balls, and I am so proud of that.
It is gay as balls.
Yeah, it is. Really, I have taken their name and turned it into something that they could not have ever predicted, and that is my revenge.
Good for you. Yeah, that's the best. And you've created a fantasy family that is absolutely wonderful. And it's not people that are biologically related to one another at all. It's I love it so much.
Well, that comes from queer people too. I'm sure as readers, you will have seen the tropification of found family. Oh, this book has found family. That book has found family. And that's great. That's wonderful. But I really want people to remember that found family came from queer people. That is a queer thing, because so many of us, like myself, didn't get to have family. We didn't get to have the love and respect that we deserve. So my family now is made up of my brother, my sister, and everybody else in our family isn't related to us by blood. We came together because we chose to, and because we love each other, not because we were there by blood and forced to feel a certain way. It has taken me a long, long time. You know, and obviously, if you've read my books, you could probably tell I have mommy and daddy issues. But it's this idea of people coming together, regardless of if they're related or not, to be together, to be happy together, to make something wonderful out of a world that often feels dark.
Yeah, and to learn how to do it too, because we don't know. It was a
we
model.
Don't.
If it wasn't modeled for you, you're not sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
Stumble around a little bit.
And you have to. And that's something that so many queer people don't have the chance to realize, you know, because we're such in a heightened state of mood because everything can feel like an attack. We have to, our heads are on a swivel at all points. I mean, I was just talking with a friend of mine, and he lives in outside of Seattle, and he was telling me that even in 2024, before he kisses his partner in public, he looks around to make sure that there's nobody that could do something.
I could see that. I could see that, unfortunately, depending on what state you are in or what city you're in, probably.
Yeah, because that's still something that is in the back of all of our minds is, can I hold my partner's hand while walking in public like everybody else gets to?
Yeah.
Can I give my partner a peck on the lips or a peck on the cheek? I mean, I'm not talking about public displays of affection. Nobody should be doing that. That's gross. But I'm talking about, you know, showing that you care, that so many heterosexual people take for granted.
Absolutely.
So many of us we have to have our heads on a swivel when we do the same thing that other people get to do.
I do think the younger generation, Gen Z, I guess, I pulled up to the high school, my daughter's high school last year, and I did see, I think he's the class president, and he was kissing his boyfriend goodbye. And it wasn't anything.
Well, the kids today are smarter.
And I just thought, hey, that's cool.
They're smarter, more savvier, more worldly than we ever were at their age.
It was just the high school parking lot. Yeah. Nobody cared.
Because that's just it.
Yeah.
Nobody actually cares about that kind of stuff, except for the online weirdos who make that their entire personality.
That's important to remember.
Right. Yeah. But it's also important to remember that kids these days, they have so much going for them. They have so, but at the same time, they know about their trans classmates being targeted. They know about books being removed from their schools. Mm-hmm. They know about wars and genocides going on around the world. And so a big crux of Somewhere Beyond the Sea is if all these decisions are being made on behalf of the youth, but we can agree that the youth are extraordinarily intelligent, why is nobody asking them what they think? Why is nobody asking them what they want? Are we afraid of the answers? I think some people are, because they're going to hear so many things have been gone wrong and been broken. Wow. But to me, it comes back to that old adage, the kids are going to be all right. They're going to make this world how it should have been from the beginning. One that is welcome to all. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love this new generation. I'm completely with you.
Well, let me tell you about a kid that I met in West Virginia. I was invited to a school in West Virginia in a very rural area. The school itself was sixth grade through 12th grade, all in one school. And I got to speak to like 300 of the students. Wow. And what did I do? I used the word queer because that's how I describe myself. And I wondered how long or have any of these kids seen a real live queer adult human being in person before? And so I gave my speech and did my thing. And afterwards, I was told that the school board was present and that they were very upset that I had used the word queer. And get this, this is the reason they were upset, because it might have made someone uncomfortable.
Might.
Not that it did. Might. But that it might.
Right.
But here's the reason why that is so important. Because right after that, I got to meet with some of the students. And I had a 12-year-old boy come up to me. And he looks at me straight in the eye. And he says, I know all about the gay stuff. And I said, okay, what do you mean, little boy? And he said, last year, I had a girlfriend. He came out as trans and now he's my boyfriend.
Oh,
if a 12-year-old kid can, it's that easy for them, what is wrong with adults?
I don't know. It is very easy because I've seen my daughter process those things very, very easily.
Quickly, too.
Quickly. It took me a while to get the language down. I'm still learning sometimes with the language.
Oh, you have, yeah, but we're learning.
But I'm learning, and it is nothing for these young people. Mm-hmm. And it is accepted. They move on, which is what, you know, I don't know. I'm Gen X. I wish, you know, it's just too bad. Like when I grew up in high school, I didn't know that there were any trans or gay people at high school because it wasn't safe for them. You know,
I was the only out kid in 1999 in my high school.
Yeah. Wow.
Out, not out to my parents. I would never have told them, even though they knew, but I was the out kid. And it's so funny. So many years after, I have talked to so many old former classmates who are now out and queer and gay. It was just one of those things. You kept it a secret. And in the late 90s, you kept this kind of, and let's be frank, there are still kids today in 2024 who aren't safe, who aren't comfortable enough to be able to speak their truth. This isn't something that's gone.
True. No.
There are kids today in urban and both in rural areas who are going through the same things that I did. Absolutely. When I was a kid. And that is horrifying that that still has happened. But at the same time, now there are people in the world trying to bring queer joy. Now there are people in the world fighting back against the draconian and Machiavellian rules and laws and legislation that is trying to be passed. We are here. And it sucks to say, but in essence, I am a queer elder because the entire generation of queer men above me died in the 80s and 90s. So the best thing I can do and the best advice that I can give to anybody listening, especially if you're queer, learn your history, learn your queer history, learn about the Stonewall riots, learn about the Black Cat riots in Los Angeles. Look up all the people, queer, trans, black, white, all of these people who came to fight for your rights so you can be here where you are today. Think about this. Obergefell, the right for same-sex marriage, is only 9 years old. Wow. That passed in 2015. I have talked to kids who their lives have only been with gay marriage being legalized. Wow. That they can remember. And there's so many of them don't know that that just happened 9 years ago. And that now there are a couple of Supreme Court justices who are signaling that they think that Obergefell oversteps. We didn't think that Roe versus Wade was going to fall. No. Why don't we think that Obergefell will fall? And if this is about their attacks on trans people, do we really think they're going to stop with just trans people? They won't. They'll come for everybody
they
else.
They absolutely won't. They're in the front. They're in the front. Yeah.
Because they're the easiest group to attack. They are a group that has some of the highest suicide rates out of any marginalized community. Oh, wow. And the fact that so many people feel the need to attack people when they've already been beaten down, that just shows you that hate is a learned, taught behavior.
Yeah.
We don't grow up inherently learning to hate.
No.
It is taught. And I choose to believe that not all people who were taught that are lost, that some people can actively and do break that cycle.
I think so too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you don't believe that, then there's no hope. There is absolutely no hope. I truly believe that there are people out there. But then of course the question comes, whose responsibility is it to help open their mind? Because it always seems to fall to the marginalized group to be the ones to do everything while everybody else is like attack, attack, attack.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Are you, using the word hope, which I love, are you hopeful about November?
Yeah. If you had asked me that 2 months ago, I would have said no, because at that point we had two walking zombies to choose between. And look, I'm not going to tell people how to vote, even though I think my politics are extraordinarily clear.
Yeah.
I will say this. I do this type of energy that I feel right now reminds me of 2007, 2008 in lead up to Barack Obama. You're right. It's not the same, but it does feel hopeful more than it has. It does feel like this might be the last chance that we have to put an end to Trump and Trumpism. And I hope that is the case. I hope that when this election goes by, and if it goes the way that I hope, that the former president will just disappear. And then, you know, things will go back and we can look back on the last 10, 15 years and say, well, that was weird. But the thing is, though, so many of us have long memories.
Yeah.
And we remember how people acted and how people treated, and that's how it's going to be. But please vote, register to vote, please vote. I just, it's a duty that we all should be taking part in.
And I think any progress that's made, there's always a few steps back and then there's a push. And I think we just need to push. We need to push.
We have to push because if we, you know, the biggest thing I think people should be focused on, aside from who they are electing, is this. There's a very good chance that two or three Supreme Court justices will either pass or retire in the next 4 years. So are we going to stack the court in one direction? Because if Trump wins, that's what's going to happen.
Of course.
And it's going to be, and it's going to change. Generations will never be able to recover. Yeah,
lives.
It already has. It already absolutely
it has
already has
changed the lives of women. That's
yes, true. Exactly, Woo! Exactly. And so when we think about ideas of like transphobia, we only hear, why do we never hear about trans men? We only hear about trans women. Why is that? Because transphobia is deeply rooted in misogyny.
Yeah.
It just comes back to
that's such
to how they treat women. It is whether it be cis women or trans women, it is misogyny through and through, just dressed up in a different name.
Gosh darn it. Yeah. And that's been going on though.
I don't have to tell you. You probably understand completely. But it's see, it's just it's Some people seem to think that straight white males should rule the world, and we're here to tell you that's not going to happen.
No. I'm not going to curse.
Right. Exactly. Because, you know, like you, for example, you think of your daughter and her future and what that looks like. And that's what so many parents are thinking about and are have hopes and fears for their children, which is why Somewhere Beyond the Sea exists at all, because something's got to give, something's got to change. And look, you're going to have people, my critics will tell you that House in the Cerulean Sea and Somewhere Beyond the Sea are very, very unsubtle. But here's the thing. Some of y'all need to be beaten over the head with this message, because otherwise you're not getting it through your thick skull.
It is. I know we need to wrap up. It is such a funny, entertaining book.
Thank you.
It's a great, sweet package to take the medicine. Do you know what I mean?
It is, because you have to have levity. You have to have humor. Things cannot always be
There's
oppressive and dark.
Throughout this book.
Yeah.
The yachting scene. Yeah. where he admits that he ate Frank.
Yeah.
Oh, I died.
Spoilers, I will tell you my favorite. I rarely laugh when I write, because I don't like to get high on my own supply. But I will say this, the scene with Chauncey, and I'm not going to spoil it, but you'll know it. The scene with Chauncey and armpit hair.
Oh, yes.
The funniest thing. It made me laugh hysterically when I was writing it, because Chauncey, it's the most ridiculous, stupid thing in the world.
So much.
But it's just Chauncey being Chauncey. And that scene in particular is it's very short. It's like a single page, but it is my favorite thing in the world.
That lives in my head too.
Yeah. Oh gosh. It is so funny.
I mean, yeah. I love this book. I love the book before it. I haven't read your other books. I'm gonna go read your other books.
Please do.
Your sense of humor is just on point. They're so great. And then you've got a 7-year-old antichrist in here named Lucy. Like, done.
Exactly. And to finish this, let me tell you a quick story, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So deep in the pandemic, I had to go through a lot of online book clubs, because nobody was going anywhere. Nobody was doing anything.
Yeah.
And I got an invitation from a Southern Baptist church.
Huh.
Who was reading The House in the Cerulean Sea.
Interesting.
And they wanted me to come and speak to their church group about it.
Okay.
So I said, this will either go really well or really horribly. I don't know what's going to happen. So I decided to put my own biases aside and go. And so when I arrived, or when I logged in, it was row after row after row of elderly white women in their 70s and their 80s.
Okay.
And they were all so lovely and welcoming, except for one.
Oh, you had one. Okay.
There was one in the top right corner. She didn't speak the entire time. All she did was glare at me through the whole call. And so I did my spiel, talked, answered questions, and got off the call. I thought, okay, I'll never hear from any of them again. That was fine. No, the next morning I got an email. Guess who it was from? The very angry woman in the top right corner.
Oh.
Why was she angry? Because how dare I include the character of the Antichrist in the book? How dare I include that character?
Okay.
Did I not know what the Antichrist was prophesied to do? And while she did come to care about 7 year or 6 year old Lucy, she wished I had gone in a different direction. But then she ended the email with the best sign-off I have ever gotten in an email, so much so that I use this sign-off in emails to my friends now. After taking me to task for the Antichrist, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of how upset she was, she ended the email by saying, but I did not mind the homosexuals. So see, here's the thing. I confronted bigotry and I made them so mad about something else, they forgot to hate gay people. That's a win.
I love it. But of all things to get upset about.
Yeah.
She
was so upset about the Antichrist, she did not mind the homosexuals.
That is the best. It is.
And it just shows you know what? Some people just need to step outside of their own world for a little bit. That's why I love books.
That's a great entry point too. Yeah,
that's why I love books. It gives you a chance to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes.
It really does. Oh my gosh. TJ, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.
Chauncey is like just here.
Chauncey for life.
Chauncey so much.
And just so you know, If you have a Barnes & Noble in your area, they now carry Chauncey merch. Oh, you can buy your own Chauncey plushie and a bunch of other merch from House & Sterling Seat at Barnes & Noble's.
That is awesome. Yeah, we have, we have the tattered cover here in Denver, and Barnes & Noble just bought them. So I bet
Chauncey will be there ready to go home with anybody who's willing to take it.
I like that. All right. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to TJ. Let's go ahead and open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews. And
let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Don't you know the devil wears a suit and tie?
Forgot my theme music.
I know, it's been a week since we had a show with the walk-up music.
Yeah.
All right, Laura, what do you got for us this week?
A book called The Wedding People by Allison Espach or Espach? Espaccio. It's Espach.
Oh, Espaccio.
I don't know how she pronounces it. So this book is so, so good.
Oh.
I read it this weekend. I have other books that I've read that I've loved that I haven't reviewed yet on the show. And this one is top of mind just because it's absolutely fantastic. So if I had read the description of this book, detailed description.
Yes.
If I really looked at the cover, which I don't because I read on Kindle, I might not have picked it up.
Whoa, really?
But.
Was it have like one of those Andrew covers?
No, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't. It doesn't. It has a very boring color cover. It's not an interesting cover at all. I don't know the choice. I'm not sure about the choice of the cover.
Huh.
It's an odd one. This is very funny. It's moving. It's a deep book and it's charming.
So you're trying to tell me you're here now to say you can't judge a book by its cover?
I guess not, Dave. Not every time.
Hmm.
So the nice thing with Kindle is you don't really, Andrew knows, you don't really
you don't
sometimes even know, unless you have a shocking cover like Andrew sometimes does. You don't always remember what the cover looks like.
You'll remember Andrew's covers.
Yeah. So I'm going to call this a grown-up rom-com combined with a midlife coming of age.
Oh, wow.
So okay. A middle-age-ish, approaching middle-age-ish woman named Phoebe checks into a very fancy hotel in Newport, Rhode Island. You know, where the Breakers are.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Taylor Swift has a house there. Only to find that the hotel is overrun by what she calls wedding people.
Oh, so, those wedding people.
Loud talking, backslapping, drinking, slightly tipsy wedding people.
Sure.
So everyone staying there appears to be there for this wedding that's happening later on this week. Everyone at the hotel really should be there for this wedding because the bride, a woman, a younger woman, named Lila, she intended for her wedding party to only be at this hotel. She didn't want anyone else, any other guests there. Somehow Phoebe was able to get a room. So Lila ends up talking to Phoebe because she thinks, well, maybe I just don't know which side of the family you're on or whatever. And Phoebe's a very unusual character is what I will say, who's awesome. And she tells her that she only intends to be here for one night, but the book goes on and you're there for the whole week with Phoebe and Lila and it's awesome. So this story is absolutely wonderful. I could not put it down. Takes place over the course of about a week at this hotel, 6 days to be precise, because the bride likes to say, don't you know everyone's doing a week destination? It's not just a wedding anymore.
A week. You got to put in a week.
6 days.
6 days.
This hotel is expensive.
To see someone get married.
Expensive.
Plenty of time for drama in 6 days.
Plenty of time for drama.
Yeah.
Lots of booze flowing.
Oh, yeah.
Relatives. Yeah. So you really get to know and love the characters that are in here. You get to know quite a few of them. The bride, the groom, mother of the bride, groom's sister, groom's best friend, groom's daughter from another marriage. This is all done very, very well.
Cool.
The writer's fantastic. So there's something significant in this book that is told, I feel like it's about a quarter of the way through, but it could be a third. And I would have thought it'd be listed on the description.
You were struggling whether or not to include
it. It is not listed on the description from the publicist. So I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
I will say if you think that you are a sensitive soul, check out the trigger warnings. I personally didn't find it triggering, but I could see that someone else might.
Okay.
It's fantastic, though.
All right.
Yes, Andrew.
So I have a funny story. So I worked, when I worked in Germany, I used
Wait a second.
What's that?
Worked in Germany?
Yeah, yeah. So I worked in Germany. I was over in Germany for 5 years, spoke fluent German, etc. So in any case, I was in Berlin one time,
mm-hmm.
right? And we stayed at like nice hotels and stuff like that. And so, like if there's James Bond movies, like taking place in Berlin, like that's where we stayed.
Oh, really
and,
nice.
And stuff like that. So like, yeah. There'll be a James Bond movie. Like, wow. Yeah, I parked my car in that garage where they're doing the chase.
That's cool.
I've stayed in that hotel.
Wow.
So in any case, I'd work, I'd give the presentation, but then I'd go out and walk around.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I typically wore a suit, right? Because I mean, back in those days.
People did.
At IBM, I mean, that's just it. You wore a suit. So I remember walking around. I'm like, oh, this bar looks kind of lively. So I walk on in. Nobody stops me. I walk on in. And I go up to the bar and get a drink, and nobody asks me to pay for it. And, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
You're a wedding crasher.
Yeah, yeah. So
look at you.
I didn't just crash a wedding. I crashed the wedding for Henry Maske, the German, the famous German boxer.
Wow.
It was his wedding. It was his wedding party. And then a girl comes up to me. She's like, you don't. She's like, do you have any idea where you are right now? No. She's like, do you know anybody? I'm like, I just walked in, and so we talked. I got a phone number.
Oh, interesting.
Look at this guy.
It may have taken her on a date or two.
Interesting.
She lived in Munich. But you know, I crashed not just a wedding party. I crashed a wedding party for a German celebrity, a boxer. You know, and I didn't stay too long. I didn't wear out my welcome. I just stayed for a couple drinks and then basically, shaking my head, called it a night.
I mean, that's kind of what Phoebe does. She is basically ends up being a wedding crasher.
Mm. How long does it take for you to wear out your welcome? I'm curious.
Oh, I have no idea there, but
wear out
you know.
My welcome. That's funny. Well, he doesn't stick around long enough to find
that's
out.
True. That's
so I didn't do it. You I didn't show out. My dance moves there.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Okay.
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 Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's really funny.
All right, very good. Excellent. So check out that book. My book this week. Is by Dwayne Swierczynski. That's Swierczynski. Swierczynski. It is called California Bear. Oh, man, did I love this book. It is a fun mystery thriller. It kind of reads like a classic Elmore Leonard novel, packed with eccentric, funny characters, lots of action, and a serial killer who's been dormant for decades, but is seriously thinking about making a comeback. All set in Los Angeles. Yeah, of course. Who doesn't love that? Don't call it a comeback. All set in sunny LA with the TV reality crime industry looming over all of it.
I shouldn't say this because it's very popular.
Yeah.
I am not a true crime.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not either.
True crime fan.
Yeah.
In general. Some of it's done well.
Right.
A lot of it really, it's upsetting to me. I guess I am a sensitive soul.
There you go. So in this book, the serial killer in question is called The Bear. He was never caught. And now former cop Cato Hightower, that's his name, has decided that he is going to catch him. And he has enlisted the help of a man named Jack Queen, who has served a couple years in prison for murder, but is now out on a technicality. Jack's daughter is a young teenager, hospitalized with a terminal case of leukemia. She fancies herself a bit of a detective as well, kind of a Nancy Drew, speaking of Nancy Drew, if you will. And she busies herself from her hospital bed by solving cold cases, just like the Bear serial killer case.
Hmm.
And I really enjoyed the scene. So a lot of times in books like these that are, you know, fun thrillers, mystery thrillers.
I like books that are, that's okay. So not a big fan of the true crime. However,
right.
I do like books, fictional books about true crime.
Yeah.
Because that's right. it's a good mystery.
It's a mystery. And it kind of pokes fun at the whole.
Yeah.
This book in particular really has a lot of fun with making fun of the true crime docuseries.
Oh, okay.
Without giving too much away. And what I liked about it is you do have the daughter in the hospital battling leukemia and the father who's out from prison, who's a good guy, though. He's a good guy. And the scenes between him and his daughter really bring like this emotional center and a lot of heart to the book. But it does have plenty of your funny caper, wacky stories, a lot of wackiness to it. The ex-cop Cato is somewhat of a hapless alcoholic who keeps getting in his own way, but in a very funny manner. There's also scenes from the bear's point of view, the serial killer, which I really enjoyed as well, as he stalks and targets his next victim. This guy thinks he's got everything figured out until a big twist drops about halfway through the book. And at that point, just the twists come fast and furious. I love these characters. I just had a smile on my face while reading this one the whole time. Very enjoyable. A lot of action, thrilling mystery to be solved also, because we don't know who the real identity of the bear is, and we're trying to figure it out as we go along. So I really enjoyed this one a lot. Check it out. California Bear by Dwayne Swierczynski. And that will take us right up to Andrew, who is sitting up.
I know.
In the
floral
settee.
He's alert. He's ready.
He's ready. He's got his notes.
He's been up since 3:30 this morning.
He's been up since 2 o'clock.
5 a.m.
And
so hard. But you're a morning person.
I am.
That's right. But still,
let's get Andrew home.
Sure. Let's get him home. Go away to OTT.
Wish you go slow. Now, I will say, this is Hard Life. And so I was watching some comedy show. Mm-hmm. And one of the songs...
Was this one?
Was not this one.
But another song
but
by
it's
them?
It's called Nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it was about this nightmare relationship, but it was actually one of his songs.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's
how about
really...
That?
That's funny.
Maybe he's too mainstream. I got to stop listening to him.
Yeah. Or you've popularized him.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's all you.
The podcast has popularized him.
Absolutely, Andrew. Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So as Dave is trying to plug something in here, I'm waiting for just the lights
Sparks
to go out.
Or something.
I'm waiting
yeah.
for the lights to go out.
It is
here.
One of those Chevy Chase
National Lampoon
Christmas
vacation.
Hey, I can plug it in over here, Dave.
Dave, right, I'm guessing you can probably unplug the iPhone charger there.
No, the iPad's about to die. My computer's about to die. Literally nothing can be unplugged from that power strip right there. All right, we got it over here. Laura's plugged it into the wall. And we're good to go. All right, Andrew, what do you got for us this week?
So my book this week is War Child. It is written by John Van Stry, Stry. It is a 4.71 on Goodreads.
Good grief.
Right?
And, wow.
And try hard.
Now, but it is book 4 in the Wolfhound series.
Okay.
Now, I didn't realize this was like book 4 in the
series. I hate it when I do that.
Because when you look at the cover, it says book 4 in real tiny print all the way at the bottom. And when I'm reading the description, nowhere did it mention
that it's number 4.
That it's number 4 or whatever in the series.
Man,
right? So
you just jumped on in.
Well, and part of it is so reading this book, I will tell you, you don't really need to have read any of the other books.
Okay, that's good.
Right? And if, as I describe it, you'll see, but it is a space opera.
Okay.
Set in the far future. The main character in this book, his name is Chase. And so there's one opening scene, but I'm actually going to jump ahead to the second chapter. And it goes back to when Chase is a boy. And so that talks a little bit about his coming of age story. Right, and I'm guessing books 1, 2, and 3 maybe talks about him as a boy,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe talks about. But this book sort of covers, the very beginning of him, and brings you brings you up at least to where book 4.
Interesting.
Book 4 begins. So
you're not really missing anything.
No, and I didn't really like I said, the description didn't talk about that. Nothing talked about it, and I didn't really realize that it was book 4. Until I was doing my prep work for the podcast.
Oh, so just...
And then I'm like, what?
Wait a second.
This is book 4. Ho, hang on a second here.
That's funny.
But you can read this without a doubt. You can read it as a standalone. So
I've done that, but usually it's a book 2. I've dived in. And then I've looked at it and I was like, wait a second. This is...
Now,
but you can't always tell with book 2.
Now I'm going to go back and read books 1, 2, and 3. Probably not.
I was thinking you don't at that point.
No, you don't go back.
No.
Because I just recently reviewed a book... I started in at number 2. I'm not going to go back and read number 1.
No, why would you? There's spoilers.
So anyways, so the coming of age part of this, Chase is a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's 16 or 17 years old. He's living on the streets. He's barely surviving.
You know, I guess he's sort of like in and out of the gangs and stuff. You know, so he's barely surviving. So basically, he meets a young, beautiful young lady who basically is like giving out food and stuff like that. And she says, hey, you should come to the shelter and we will feed you and you can have a home cooked meal, everything. Come on down to the shelter and check us out. And she is an attractive young lady. So
it's a cult.
So let's see.
It's a cult.
Oh, Laura's calling it as
a cult. I'm calling it a cult.
And that's pretty much right.
Yeah.
And so he shows up
there.
That's
what they do. You get the attractive ones.
And that's how they get you.
And she's like, you know, go take a shower, mm-hmm. get cleaned up. We'll get you some nice clothes. He eats well. And then she just says, hey, you know,
hey there.
You want to come back to my place with me?
Does she really?
Yeah, yeah. So basically he ends up, you know, hooking up.
Oh.
You know, and then.
I did not expect that. And so for
a couple days. You know, that's what happens. She's taking care of them.
Oh.
Right. So he's thinking, man, I've really lucked into it. And then he basically has to kill his first person.
Okay. It's a cult.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. To basically
Manson
make up
family
for
here.
Yeah, it. So, is the Manson family.
So that's the situation.
Okay.
Like it sort of starts out and then the book goes well into the future and now Chase is a man. He is a war hero. He is a commander. And he basically has been captured by a government that has overthrown, like, the emperor, the imperial empire. He's overthrown it. And this guy's name is Philip T. Neal. He is head of the Democratic People's Republic of Solaria. Now, Phil T. Neal basically is a complete schmuck. He's an autocrat. You know, he like wants to say, oh, it's a democracy, but is it really a democracy?
Mm.
No, it is not. If you look the wrong way at Phil Neal, he will have you eliminated.
That's a funny name.
Yeah. And maybe Phil T. Neal, P. T. Neal. I don't know if it's a play on things. But so anyways, Phil hates Chase, right? And Chase is a war hero. He basically like ended up going from being on the streets. And he basically ended up in the military, right? You know, the space military, whatever you want to call it. And this book talks a little bit about why that happened. So it will kind of explain how he went from, you know, being in this sort of cult as sort of like a gladiator, you know, type thing to basically being in the military. So you kind of get that. You get that in this book. And Chase also somehow was sort of perpetrating that he was a royal himself, that he was royalty. And so Philip T. Neal is creating a trial in which they want to try Chase for his war crimes, right? Because Chase was on the opposite side of the Democratic People's Republic of Solaria, or the DPRS sure. to be for short.
Hmm.
And so he's thinking he can basically put Chase on display in the courts and he can make it look great. And then he basically will kill Chase in the most painful way possible.
Hmm.
Now, one of the opening scenes, Chase gets beat to within a millimeter of his life. So I didn't say an inch because
it's a metric system.
That's right.
We're back to the perfect system.
So that's
right.
Might as well.
So I should say he beat him within 2.33 centimeters of his life.
Okay.
I think that's an inch, or maybe it's
3 cm is 1.25 ish.
So is it 3.22? How many centimeters?
It would be 2 point something.
So 2.33. I think that's right.
I think you're right.
So it's within 2.33 centimeters of his life.
Okay.
I think Andrew's correct.
Yeah. And so, but of course that's the problem. So
not
of course
on your first.
Then they have to heal Chase because they can't have him looking all beat up when he goes to trial. Now, Does the trial go as Phil T. Neal would like, or does Chase actually get the upper hand and embarrass the hell out of Phil T. Neal?
Ah,
in this openly public trial.
That's the risk,
right? And so that's what happens. So this book is 40% sort of this courtroom trial. It is 20% basically seizing his legacy, and you have to like read the book to find out what his legacy is. And I would say it's 40% retribution as far as the book goes, but it's a little bit different.
That math made sense.
Yep. Then yeah. It's a little bit different than, let's say, most space operas.
It sounds different. I've never known you to read a courtroom drama that's set in space.
Yeah. It's structured differently.
True. Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's got a 4.71 on Goodreads with thousands of reviews.
It's crazy.
So I see 4.7. I'm thinking, oh, maybe it's got like 6 reviews. And I look and there's thousands, you know, there's thousands of reviews.
That's impressive, yeah.
But, you know, I enjoyed the book. Maybe you shouldn't, you should look at least at book one.
Maybe start with book one.
Maybe.
Start with book one.
At least look at the reviews or look at the write-up for book one. But I started with book four. But it is, the book is called War Child by John Van Stry.
All right, very good. And that is recommended by...
Down.
Which brings us up to
the audiobook of the week,
and my pick this week is titled Broiler by Eli Craner, C-R-A-N-O-R, and I love this author. He's written a couple books that I've recommended on this podcast, and this is a literary crime fiction thriller that I loved. This is a case of the haves versus the have-nots. In this case, the manager of a chicken processing plant, who along with his wife square off against a Mexican-American family, in particular a husband and wife who both work at this plant, Edwin and Gabriella. Both of them undocumented, both of them living in a trailer park. And when Edwin is fired from the plant just for being late, he takes his revenge out on the manager with an act that affects the manager and his wife. And I don't want to give away... Again, Laura, what you were saying, the review, like some of the reviewers mentioned how he gets his revenge, but the actual
tag yeah. For when the I read my book, it was a surprise to me.
So
and
I'm
it
not
was
say
interesting.
What he does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't know. But I might not have read it if I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Well, the author in this case does a great job at showing the brutal conditions that exist in this plant, the unfairness of it, the long hours on your feet for minimal pay, the pace they're expected to keep up. And just talking about, I can't imagine walking on one of these chickens coming by on a conveyor belt, and the woman, she's just ripping the breasts off these raw chickens as they come down the line. It's got to be kept at a certain temperature. It's got to be kept at a cold temperature because, you know, it's raw chicken.
So what you're saying is it may not be the breast job.
Not the breast job.
How do you think of these? Do they just come to you?
They just come to me, yeah.
Andrew's always thinking about breasts.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I had a big old juicy chicken breast for dinner tonight, too.
I bet you did.
I'm sure you did. So there are a lot of questions raised in this book about fairness, what's right, what's wrong, who gets to decide justice. It's just such a gripping novel, a lot of action. There are tough questions raised here. Enjoyed this one a lot. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is Broiler by Eli Craner, narrated by Victoria Villarreal.
She watched the dark-haired waiter balance 3 plates on one arm as he hustled past her table and the 5 other women she'd invited to La Huerta. They were wives of Detmer Foods plant managers. They played bunco and were members of local junior league chapters. And just recently, they'd all performed a miracle. "Really appreciate everyone making the time," Mimi said, reaching for her glass of water, wishing it was a margarita. It had been almost a year. "No, you're busy." "I'm busy, busier now than ever, but it's important for us to get together, to share things and express our..." "Hold up," Gina Brashears said, the only woman at the table with an alcoholic beverage.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. That is your audiobook of the week. And yes, Andrew?
I'm going to take the over tonight.
Yeah. Yes. Take the over. A lot of edits need to be done on that.
Another
perfect show in the books. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to TJ Kloon for joining us. Check out his book,
Somewhere
Beyond the Sea.
Did you say what episode number this was?
Episode 266.
Okay, 266.
Yep. Mm-hmm. See you next week.
Adios.
Excelsior.
Country kids know how to party.